So I know you've seen it. It's been everywhere. Everybody has been talking about it. It's been on all the timelines from every brand that I manage, including the podcast timeline, which you should definitely follow on Instagram at LiveXBW. It's this news about this VR headset or virtual reality headset that was made by the founder of Oculus, who designed the whole virtual reality thing. And it's a headset that essentially will kill you if you die in the actual game. Now, if you're anything like me, which I presume so, which is why you're here, when I saw this headline, I just had a bunch of questions. I just wanted to know how this thing worked, or is it even like a real thing? Is it legal? If it is real, will it be on the market? Not that I'm interested, but you know, is it going to be available? Like, how is this even possible? Basically, to sum up all of those questions, just how is this possible? And after a few days of research, I got to answer a lot of those questions. And I was curious to see if anybody else had been answering those questions or even asking them. Sometimes it just feels like some of these headlines pop up on a Twitter timeline and just, you know, move on. People just digest it for what the headline is, but don't really know the story behind it. Or in our case, the science behind it. So let's get to the bottom of this virtual reality or deadly virtual reality headset, I should say. We'll talk about the guy behind it. We'll get into how it works, its availability, where and if you can get it. Well, I think you knew what availability meant. The underrated risks involved with it. And I mean, its history in general. So let's get to it. I'm going to finish up this game and then I'll be right upstairs.
Live in a beautiful state.
This is Live BW, Season 8, Episode 176, The Science Behind the Deadly Virtual Reality System. Let's explore. This is where we live.
Yes. Thank you, Cor. Appreciate you, girl. All right, so let's start with the designer of it all. He's actually the guy that founded Oculus, who kind of began this whole virtual reality journey in terms of like commercial technology. We actually bought my dad an Oculus, which I may have talked about on the podcast a couple of years ago. We bought it for him a couple of years ago for Christmas, the very first version of it. Now, the founder of that virtual reality firm, Oculus, his name is Palmer Luckey. He launched Oculus in 2012 before selling it to Facebook for $2 billion in 2014. And of course, he left as a result of that, which I think was more so his choice. Like, I think he had the option to stay, but don't hold me to that. That's just me just talking here. Now, essentially, his work with Oculus and then it consequently being purchased by Facebook is kind of what set the stage for what we are seeing as the quote unquote metaverse today, which is just getting started. Like, everybody's been speaking about getting involved with the metaverse, brands of all sorts, all the way down to just, you know, people, whether you're into gaming or whether you just like technology or if you just like to explore different things. A good majority of my friends have some sort of interest in this entire virtual reality world, if you will. And I have enough interest in it to make up for all the other friends who don't have any. But although Luckey left Oculus after it was sold to Facebook and all of that, Facebook basically built the metaverse around the entire Oculus idea. And their goal is to create a, quote, alternative world where you can work, play, and meet people without leaving your home. Now, the metaverse is an entirely different episode, which we can focus on some other day. But today, we're focusing on this deadly VR and its creator, Palmer Luckey, the founder of Oculus VR, whose real-time net worth today, according to Forbes, is $1.3 billion. And apparently, after his announcement, his stock value has actually gone up 0.07%, which is intriguing because I'm just still dumbfounded by the fact that people are actually interested in this. But anyways, he built the first pieces of technology under Oculus called the Oculus Rift virtual reality headset when he was 16 years old. In 2017, he founded defense startup Anduril, which planned to raise $1 billion at an $8 billion valuation during the summer of 2022. He grew up in Long Beach, California, where he was homeschooled by his mother and spent time working on cars with his father. And this is kind of where he stumbled into the whole virtual reality thing. After upgrading old video game consoles to make them mobile, he started collecting bulky VR headsets and tinkering with them. And that's coming straight from his Forbes profile, which will be linked in the description below, which you'll also see that he was on the Forbes list, 30 under 30, or America's Richest Entrepreneurs under 40 in 2016, I should say. And then he made the 30 under 30 list in the games category for 2014. And this is always an interesting nugget to me, considering how much we speak about college. He did go to California State University in Long Beach, but he dropped out. Now, I'm not sure if it happened while he was being homeschooled or whatever, but he was a fan of a Japanese novel series turned anime entitled Sword Art Online, which I will admit that I have no clue anything about it, never knew it existed until this happened. But the basis of the series is that there are some players in it that are trapped in an online role-playing game where if you die in the game, that means you die in the real world because of this killer, quote, nerve gear headset that they wear. I know, sounds like a great series, but I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not too excited about it in terms of like real life. It's just weird, but that's what it was all based on. And essentially his announcement the other day was basically that he was working on the real life version of that quote unquote nerve gear, and also that he was halfway there. Here's his quote based on that halfway there situation. "The bad news is that so far I've only figured out the half that kills you." He continued, "The perfect VR half of the equation is still many years out." That's a direct quote from his blog, the blog of Palmer Luckey, which will also be linked down below. Now, from a scientific standpoint, it's fascinating how this works. There's literally no other way to categorize it, honestly. In his blog, Luckey explained that the device is connected to three explosive charge modules, and they're tied to this narrow-band photo sensor that can detect when the screen flashes red at a specific frequency. He continues, "When an appropriate game-over screen is displayed, the charges fire, instantly destroying the brain of the user." Now, though it's fascinating to think about, no pun intended, I have to imagine that that probably wasn't as difficult as all of the wordiness made it seem, because it's the half of the system that he has figured out. And he says that the perfect VR half of the equation is still many years out. So I imagine that making something that'll blow you up, I guess it ain't that difficult, according to this. Now, going in, I thought it was some sort of nerve agent because it was based on creating a real-life version of that nerve gear thing that came from the Japanese novel series he was following after. But after diving into it and doing some more research, it's literally just an explosive device. So I guess my question then is, like, how controlled is all of that? But it's probably one of those questions that's, like, in super fine print anyway, because still the biggest question to me is why and who wants this? But as some people have told me on Instagram, or told us on Instagram, I should say, at LiveXBW, there are people across the world who may enjoy playing this, especially those in areas where euthanasia is legal. So, I don't know, this is interesting. It's a very weird conversation. But this mic is live, so we have to have it. Now, we'll go back to Lucky's words because I think it's interesting to see him kind of pinpoint the risks that are involved with this now. He says, "The new system isn't perfect, as we've mentioned before. Quote, there's a huge variety of failures that could occur and kill the user at the wrong time," which is just unbelievable. What? This is why I kept asking why and who. Never mind. But he continues, "This is why I have not worked up the balls to actually use it myself." He calls the killer headset, which literally he already has it, by the way, he calls that a thought-provoking reminder of unexplored avenues in game design. And some are saying it's just considered quote-unquote office art at this point. It's not on the market. It hasn't even begun to jump through the legal hoops that I don't even think that anybody could maneuver with this thing. But it hasn't even begun that process to even make itself available. As of right now, this deadly VR headset is literally just sitting on Palmer Luckey's desk as quote-unquote office art. And it's worth pointing out again that he's so worried about the risks involved that even he hasn't picked it up and gave it a shot yet. No pun intended. But this isn't the first time that this has happened, even though he said it is. This isn't the first time this has happened. This is the first time that somebody said that You can die from it. But exploring this world of blending reality with virtual reality, developers have been trying to do that for some time. And to be honest with you, I love the idea of it. I know. Not the idea of the whole explosion thing, but blending that world between reality and virtual reality, I think that's the next level of gaming and the next level of, I'll say, the virtual lifestyle. Because at that point, it's beyond playing a game. You can use virtual reality for so many things that can help you in real life. But we'll get into that on the other side, because there's some history involved with it too. Cora?
Coming up, did you know that there was already technology like this? Have you heard about the trials? Did you hear what the FDA approved? More on the way on Live BW.
So where did this idea come from? Well, it's probably been in everybody's mind for some time, because I know I've thought about it from the sports gaming perspective. I love to play all sorts of sports games, franchise games, and I create this whole little fantasy world and create different characters. It's really cool, at least for me and my little brother. But we call it like sports simulation, and I've always thought that the next step of that is whatever world that can be created where it kind of blends reality with virtual reality. And according to research, that idea, people started to act on that idea in 2001 when they created something called a, quote, pain station. It's an art installation that was in Germany, according to Euronews.next, where they would like hit players. Like if you lost a game, you would get hit with a, quote, sensation such as heat, punches, or electroshocks of varying duration. So it's like when you lose, or you know, you basically feel it in real life. I think that's dope. Now that's cool to me. That doesn't cross the line, because you're just feeling it. You're not like dying, like, you know. And speaking of which, they actually did draw the line, because this article says that they would end the game when a player found the pain was too much to bear. And then how about this? Also in 2001, they did the same kind of situation, but with this game that we all used to play called Tekken. I used to love Tekken. They did something called the Tekken Torture Tournament. And it had 32 participants who would play Tekken 3 while wearing, quote, shocking arm straps that gave them bracing but non-lethal electrical shocks in correspondence to the injuries sustained by their on-screen avatars. And ironically, though, the whole idea that, you know, he poses, or the level that he's taking it to, I don't really agree with that, but I do agree with what Lucky said in terms of raising the stakes with gaming like this. He says, the idea of tying your real life to your virtual avatar has always fascinated me. You instantly raise the stakes to the maximum level and force people to fundamentally rethink how they interact with the virtual world and the players inside it. Now, making people rethink that, I think, is maybe a little overrated, because it's the virtual world. You know, people don't care about what they say on Call of Duty. That ain't really the big thing. But I do agree with the fact that, you know, being able to actually feel the sensation of getting tackled by an NFL player, that's fun. That raises the stakes of gaming, using his words, you know, or feeling some sort of like electro pulse, like hit or punch or something that mimics you getting punched in the virtual world. It's just another dimension. It just adds an extra dimension to gaming. And it could be beneficial to other people who use the virtual world to train for different things. Like, there are surgeons who practice their procedures, if you will, hundreds of thousands of times in the virtual world to get better at it in real life. That added dimension of actually being able to feel what's happening in the virtual world instead of just hearing it and seeing it, that extra dimension creates an extra dimension of opportunity as well, providing a whole new frequency, if you will, to do whatever you need to do with that experience, if that makes sense. So if you can't tell, I'd pseudo support it. I don't support the idea of dying while playing a video game, but I do support the idea of raising the stakes a little bit. And I hope that developers will take Lucky's idea and run with it, and obviously make it a lot safer. But this could be the very beginning of something that will completely change our lives, you know, 30, 40 years down the road, because you'll have an entirely different world where you can live, play, and most importantly, learn. Now, is it on the market? No. Will it be on the market? I'm going to say 80% no, 20% yes. And that yes is tied to another sentence that says it won't look like this. I don't think you will ever have the opportunity to actually die in a video game. That is just too much no. Like, I can't think of one legislator that will allow that to go. No matter what side of the aisle you sit on, that ain't gonna work. The only thing technically you could tie it to is by saying that it's some sort of, maybe it's infringing upon some sort of freedom if you're not allowed to put something like that on the market. But this is literally, this is beyond hurtful. This is literally deadly. But I think that if they find a way to soften it up, you know, there's no reason to just beat around the bush here. If they find a way to make it so that you don't die, like everything else except dying in the game, I think that they'll be okay with it. And actually, according to this ARS Technica article from last week, it says that last year, the Food and Drug Administration approved the virtual reality pain management system that uses, quote, established principles of behavioral therapy intended to address the physiological symptoms of pain and aid in pain relief through a skills-based treatment program. And of course, if you want to read that verbiage, you can do it at the link below. But I think you don't get lost in the verbiage per se. When I'm starting to see that now, you know, I've been on this earth 32 years, sounds so dramatic when I said it like that, but I'm put like this, I'm just at that age now to understand that there are processes to certain things, especially when looking to pass laws and to make things legal. So now marijuana is legal in a lot of places, but at first it had to start with the quote unquote main reason why it should be legal. And then they made that portion of it legal. And then now it's become recreational. But you see how it was a process. I think that that verbiage right there that the FDA approved last year. Yeah, it sounds like there's some sort of pain management thing. Like basically it has to be scientifically bound and you have to be able to prove a bunch of stuff to, you know, make it happen. But I think that's just the beginning. I think at some point you will literally be able to buy a headset, or I guess a bodysuit in this case, and feel electromagnetic shocks while you're playing Call of Duty. We may even get to the point where there'll be some sort of neurological sensor that will allow you to feel the wind while you're driving around Grand Theft Auto, or the rumble of the ground, like, you know, while you're playing a football game and you have those big offensive linemen and defensive linemen who are just shaking the ground. The rumble of takeoff when you're doing Flight Simulator. I think that there will be a day where all of those things are possible, you know? And this is just the beginning of it. But this whole dying in the video game thing, it's a genius thing that you'll never be able to see in real life. I don't think so. At least I hope not. But as always, it's not about me, or I should say it's not just about me, because I'm a person too, right? I get to live here. We'd love to know what you think. If you go to our Instagram at LiveXBW, you can send us a message. We'll post it, respond to it, obviously, and we'll add it to our conversation. All right, back to the game I go. See you next time.
LiveBW is produced by The Citizens and hosted by Brian James. For questions regarding today's episode, contact the show at LiveXBW on Instagram. Until we meet again, this transmission will now terminate.